You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
To help keep this place up and running and humming away. Get it? Got it? Good. Call clickgranger.com or stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Now that the holiday season is here, it's more important than ever for small businesses to defend themselves against cyber attacks. Tony Fenton at Nationwide Insurance says there's a couple of things small businesses can do.
We suggest, limiting the physical access, such as your data, your network, your sensitive files, which could include hardware, laptops, USB sticks, the normal items.
Fenton says the average small business cyber attack now costs about $21,000. Fenton also says a recent survey found 80% of small business owners without a cybersecurity plan, even though 63% of them had taken cyber attacks. Tony Fenton at Nationwide Insurance says cybercrime is getting a lot more expensive and quickly.
The cost of dealing with these type of crimes has skyrocketed in recent year to roughly $21,000 per attack, which is up significantly from 2 years ago at $8,700.
Tony Fenton with Nationwide Insurance. With more online at westernjournalism.com, you're listening to USA Radio News.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-479-2697. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-479-2697.
It's obvious that winter weather is here, and even if winter hasn't officially started yet, that means it's still cold season. Dr. Holly Lucille is a nationally recognized neuropath, and she says you have a new weapon this year to help head off colds as they start.
One of the things I've done is partnered with Zicam. They have a new homeopathic cold remedy nasal swab. It's the only nasal swab that's been clinically proven to shorten colds if used at the first sign.
Dr. Holly Lucille says a key to modern cold fighting is to get right to it.
There was a survey that was done, and over half the adults wait either like a day or more to actually start treating a cold, and I am here to tell you I think that's the worst thing to do.
A Facebook video posted by a Colorado woman is drawing questions after officials at Walmart said they can't find any proof of her claims. The video in question shows an emotional Paige Yore talking about an incident that she says happened in line at a Pueblo, Colorado Walmart. Yore said a cashier burst into tears after she tried to comfort him following a conflict with a difficult customer. Yore said the male cashier said his mother had committed suicide that day, and she posted the video to ask people to be nicer. The video quickly went viral, but now there are questions about Yore's truthfulness. Walmart officials say they've scanned store surveillance video, and while they have found Yore in the checkout line, their video doesn't match her story. Yore has not posted any response on her Facebook page. I'm Ron Taylor, and this is USA Radio News.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Thank you. Welcome to Tech Today on HuntingChamberRadio.com. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Blue Panther Business Partners offers practical advice, hands-on assistance to the business owner who never has time to improve his or her business. We do that by accomplishing your wish list. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology so that consumers seeking solutions for personal or business use can be better informed when making purchasing decisions or hiring individuals to carry out technological decisions. Each week, I'll focus on topics about technology. Segments could include the news, latest apps, buying advice for hardware and software, and answering your questions. To contact me during the show, go to Tech Today on Facebook. Email me at goodmorning@huntingchamberradio.com. My phone number is 908-237-0410 at the studio. Or to contact me during outside the show, go to bluepantherbiz.com. Well, here it is. It's December 8th, 2015, and welcome to another edition of Tech Today. And not too many more before the end of the year. And so we have some news that we go over to kind of give you some insight into where technology is heading and what you might want to choose, especially with the holidays coming up. One of the things that's coming up constantly in the news and constantly being worked on and thought about is the concept of the electric car. You know it's going in that direction. And so this article will definitely give you insight into the fact that it's going to be mass made at some point. Why do I say that? Well, because according to Reuters and on Yahoo.com, it says that China is forecast to become the world's largest electric car market. And so with China being the largest consumer of electric vehicles, it will definitely be a necessity. So China is forecast to become the world's biggest electric car market this year, with sales estimated at 220,000 to 250,000 vehicles. The official news agency, Xinhua, said on Sunday, quoting the China Association of Automobile Manufacturers, "Worldwide electric car sales are expected to increase to 600,000 this year," Association Deputy Secretary General Zhu Yanhua told an industry conference. "China is tipped to surpass the United States as the world's biggest electric car market," she said, putting the U.S. market at an estimated 180,000 vehicles. "China's electric car industry is developing rapidly, but quality is not just quantity, should be the focus for the development to be sustainable," Zhu said. "Safety and the quality of batteries should be carefully supervised," she added. The industry saw explosive growth in the past 2 years, thanks to supportive government policies, including subsidies and tax cuts. In the first 10 months of the year, sales of electric cars surged 290% year over year to 171,145, according to the association's data. Well, there's two things that are really interesting there. One is that China has now surpassed the United States, but the other one is that, hey, we're still dishing out 180,000 electric cars a year. Doesn't seem that way, but I guess that's the case. And so I don't know if that also includes pseudo golf carts as we get our senior generation moving down into the Carolinas and the Georgia and Florida and Texas. A lot of those particular areas and resorts offer the ability for seniors to drive golf carts or electric cars that, pseudo golf carts. And I wonder if that includes that or if it's just the Tesla kind or the Prius kind. It would be interesting to get the insight into that. Well, we're talking about the older generation. Well, let's cut back to the younger generation. Reuters reports that VTech hack exposes ID theft risk in connecting kids to the Internet. So Jim Finkel and Jeremy Wagstaff reported on the 6th that parents who gave their child a KittyZoom smartwatch or VTech InnoTab tablet may have exposed them to identity theft after Hong Kong-based VTech said hackers stole the personal information of more than 6 million children. The breach underscores how digital products aimed at kids often have far weaker security than other computer products and may pose a threat to booming industry. Shipments of toys that connect to the Internet will rise 200% over the next 5 years, according to estimates by UK-based Juniper Research. It's not clear what the motive was for the VTEC breach, nor whether it was resulted in any identity theft so far. Still, it's a warning for people who don't understand how much data and sensitive information is in a child's toy. Quote, "The last thing you would ever imagine is that a toy manufacturer would lose your child's identity," said Liam Omurchu, a Symantec Corp researcher known for his work dissecting complex malware produced by nation states. "This shows that it's harder and harder to do things safely online," he said. In VTech's case, buyers of the company's cameras, watches, and tablets are encouraged to provide names, addresses, and birth dates when signing up for accounts where they can download updates, games, books, and other content. VTech said the hackers compromised its Learning Lodge app store, which provides content for children's tablets, and its KidConnect mobile app service that lets parents communicate with those tablets. Toys that gather data on the user, like VTech's line of cameras, watches, and tablets, and their associated websites, will grow by 58% annually, according to Juniper. That category includes dolls like Mattel Inc.'s recently introduced Hello Barbie, which connects to home wireless networks and communicates with servers to enable conversations by uploading audio and getting responses from the cloud. Mobile security firm Bluebox and independent security researcher Andrew Hay on Friday disclosed that they had jointly uncovered multiple vulnerabilities in iOS and Android apps that work with the device, as well as its cloud servers operated by technology partner ToyTalk. Among those findings, they claim that could be hacked to reveal passwords, could be tricked into connecting to hostile networks controlled by hackers, and that the servers were vulnerable to some type of attacks. Mattel spokesman Michelle Schedoni said that the toy maker and Hello Barbie technology partner ToyTalk have taken steps to ensure that products meet security and safety standards. ToyTalk said in a statement that it had already fixed many of these issues raised. It's too soon to say if the breach will hurt VTech sales. Still, its stock fell 2.6% this week as it hired forensic experts responding to government investigations on three continents and temporarily shut down more than a dozen websites, including a messaging service and kids app store. Mark Stanislav, a researcher at the security firm Rapid7 Inc., whose wife is expecting their first child in a few weeks, began looking into problems with children's products after hearing about security flaws in baby monitors, and he subsequently found such problems in products from 8 baby monitor vendors. After disclosing the flaws to the companies earlier this year, he said most have been fixed. He told Reuters he had since found problems in websites and connect other types of devices to kids, including one from a major manufacturer. He will go public with those findings next month after giving manufacturers time to fix the problems. Identity thieves use compromised data to pose as their victims, get loans or credit cards, or apply for services such as utilities. Other types of criminals assume stolen identities to evade capture by police. Children offer credit slates to fraudsters that can be exploited for years without the victim's knowledge, said Tom Kellerman, chief cybersecurity officer for Trend Micro. Kids have a longer life in front of them, and they have completely clean credit, which makes them more valuable, Kellerman said. A child's name, birth date, and email address, and social security number are worth $30 to $40 in some underground markets, more than $20 value of most adult profiles. Research by Carnegie Mellon University of 2011 found that more than 10% of a sample of stolen children's social security numbers had some sort of fraudulent activity associated with them, a proportion 51 times higher than adults. Child might not find out about their identity had been stolen until they are in their late teens, said Michelle Kennedy, Cisco Systems, Inc.'s chief privacy officer, who founded an identity theft site for parents. And that's the identityproject.com. It's a pain when you are an adult, but for a child it can have so much more harm, said Kennedy. Somebody's might fail a background check for first job or get arrested because a child molester stole their identity. Still, VTech has some frustrated customers, even though cyber experts said the stolen VTech data had yet to turn up in forums where such information is sold. "My concern is myself and other unlucky parents out there buying these products during the holidays and have no warning that they might not be able to use these products now or in the future, said Sarah Brace, a Canadian who commented on VTech's Facebook pages. And it may attract U.S. regulator scrutiny. U.S. rules enforced by the Federal Trade Commission limit how personal information collected online from children under age 13 is treated. That information can include photos, videos, chat logs. Just the sort of data that appears to have been collected by VTech, said Phyllis Marcus, a former FTC official, now at the law firm Hunton and Williams, LLP. The FTC declined to confirm or deny any probe of VTech authorities in Hong Kong. The United Kingdom and the U.S. states of Connecticut and Illinois have said they are looking into the breach. Seemed a little petty there, Ms. Brace. We have thousands of kids who have their identity lost, and you're complaining that you can't log into your toy. Man, you know, when you start getting technology to your children, you really have to go through the due diligence of making sure that they are signing up for something that you can control. And quite honestly, anything that's a website-based, email-based, you should be putting your email address in there and conveying it to them. You can do the stuff together, but you do not want to sign up your kid on the internet with an email address or an age or any type of birth date. That is just silly. And to do that is putting your child in danger. We have enough trouble trying to deal with it, and now you have these toys that are specifically designed to make it easier for a child to log in. Well, if it's easy for a child to log in, it stands to reason that it's easy for anybody to hack it. And so that's where the real crux of the problem shows up. Well, sorry to be a downer there for the beginning of the show, but we're going to take a break now, and we'll be back with more of Tech Today right after these messages. Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent. Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntonChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntonChamberRadio.com app today.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to Tech Today on HuntonChamberRadio.com. And we just talked about VTech hack. Well, the other big news that's been going throughout the world, not just the United States, is obviously the militant propaganda. All the different unfortunate mass shootings and the association with ISIS and other militant groups. And with social media, we've given these militant groups or sympathizers of militant groups the ability to post anything they want. And, you know, you understand our Constitution. They have the right to free speech. And so the question is, what do we do about it? Or should we do anything about it? Well, social media companies step up battle against militant propaganda. And Reuters' Joseph Men wrote this article on December 5th on Yahoo.com. And he says that Facebook, Google, and Twitter are stepping up efforts to combat online propaganda and recruiting by Islamic militants. But the internet companies are doing it quietly to avoid the perception that they are helping the authorities police the web. On Friday, Facebook Inc. said it took down a profile that the company believed belonged to San Bernardino shooter Tashfeen Malik, who, with her husband, is accused of killing 14 people in a mass shooting that the FBI is investigating as an act of terrorism. Just a day earlier, the French Prime Minister and European Commission officials met separately with Facebook, Google, Twitter, and other companies to demand faster action on what the commission called, quote, online terrorism incitement and hate speech, unquote. The internet companies described their policies as straightforward. They ban certain types of content in accordance with their own terms of service and require court orders to remove or block anything beyond that. Anyone can report or flag content for review and possible removal. But the truth is far more subtle and complicated. According to former employees, Facebook, Google, and Twitter all worry that if they are public about their true level of cooperation with Western law enforcement agencies, they will face endless demands for similar action from countries around the world. They also fret about being perceived by consumers as being tools of the government. Worse, if the companies spell out exactly how their screening works, they run the risk that technologically savvy militants will learn more how to beat their systems. If they knew what magic sauce went into pushing content into the news feed, spammers or whoever would take advantage of that, said a security expert who had worked at both Facebook and Twitter, who asked not to be identified because of the sensitivity of the issue. One of the most significant yet least understood aspects of the propaganda issue is the range of ways to which social media companies deal with government officials. Facebook, Google, and Twitter say they do not treat government complaints differently from citizen complaints, unless the government obtains a court order. The trio are among a group growing number that publish regular transparency reports summarizing the number of formal requests from officials about content on their sites. But there are workarounds, according to former employees, activists, and government officials. A key one is for officials or their allies to complain that a threat, hate speech, or celebration of violence violates the company's terms of service, rather than any law. Such content can be taken down within hours or minutes, and without the paper trail that would go without a court order. It is commonplace for federal authorities to directly contact Twitter and ask for assistance, rather than going through formal channels, said an activist who had helped get numerous accounts disabled. In the San Bernardino case, Facebook said it took down Malik's profile, established under an alias, for violating its community standards, which prohibit praise or promotion of acts of terror. The spokesman said that was pro-Islamic State content on the page, but declined to elaborate. Some well-organized online activists have also had success getting social media sites to remove content. A French-speaking activist using the Twitter alias Nage Anon said he helped get rid of thousands of YouTube videos by spreading links of clear cases of policy violations and enlisting other volunteers to report them. The more it gets reported, the more it will get reviewed quickly and treated as an urgent case, he said on Twitter message to Reuters. A person familiar with YouTube's operations said the company officials tend to quickly review videos that generate a high number of complaints relative to the number of views. Relying on numbers can lead to other kinds of problems. Facebook suspended or restricted the accounts of many pro-Western Ukrainians after they were accused of hate speech by multiple Russian-speaking users in what appeared to be a coordinated campaign, said former Facebook security staffer Nick Belogorsky, who is a Ukrainian immigrant who helped some of those accounts win appeals. He said the complaints have leveled off. A similar campaign attributed to Vietnamese officials at least temporarily blocked content by government critics, activists said. Facebook declined to discuss their cases. What law enforcement, politicians, and some activists would really like is for internet companies to stop banned content from being shared in the first place. But what would pose a tremendous technological challenge as well as an enormous policy shift, former executive said. Some child pornography can be blocked because the technology companies have access to a database that identifies previously known images. A similar type of system is in place for copyrighted music. There is no database for videos of violent acts, and the same footage that might violate a social network's terms of service if uploaded by an anonymous militant might pass if it were part of a news broadcast. Nicole Wong, who previously served as the White House's Deputy Chief Technology Officer, said tech companies would be reluctant to create a database of jihadist videos, even if it could be kept current enough to be relevant, for fear that repressive governments would demand such setups to pre-screen any content they do not like. Technology companies are rightfully cautious because they are global players, and if they build it for one purpose, they don't get to say if it can't be used for anything else, said Wong, a former Twitter and Google legal executive. If you build it, they will come. It will also be used in China to stop dissidents. There have been some formal policy changes. Twitter revised its abuse policy to ban indirect threats of violence in addition to direct threats and has dramatically improved its speed for handling abuse requests. Across the board, we respond to requests more quickly, and it's safe to say government requests are in that bunch, the spokesman said. And Facebook said it banned this year any content praising terrorists. Google's YouTube has expanded a little-known trusted flagger program, allowing groups ranging from a British and terror police unit to be Simon Wiesenthal Center, a human rights organization, to flag large numbers of videos as problematic and get immediate action. A Google spokeswoman declined to say how many trusted flaggers there were, but said the vast majority were individuals chosen based on their past accuracy in identifying content that violated YouTube's policies. No U.S. government agency were part of the program, though some nonprofit U.S. entities have joined in the past year, she said. There's no Wizard of Oz syndrome. We send stuff in, we get an answer, said Rabbi Abraham Cooper, head of the Wiesenthal Center's Digital Terrorism and Hate Project. Interesting conundrum, isn't it not? First of all, we're dealing with the world of we're dealing with global issues here. And because we're dealing with global issues and global perspectives, you can see how Facebook and Google and Twitter are caught in the middle of different cultural perspectives. And when they start to build something, it's fascinating, by the way, that they have a database full of copyrighted music that they can run against to find out when music is being uploaded that's not given credit or paid for. But when they build something that would be able to create jihadist content or militant content, it's obvious that if the U.S. uses it for pro-capitalist perspectives, that throws in a bias when you look at it from China's perspective. China trying to keep their government and their stable and dealing with the pressure from some of their residents that want China to be more relaxed and more capitalistic, more U.S.-like. And yet China, the government, which is stable and trying to do the right thing from their perspective, is sitting there trying to quell the uprising of those that are dissidents towards their government. And if there was something going on in the world of China that would make the U.S. happy because it would be more capitalistic, it obviously would go against the grain of what China is trying to do. So it's interesting how Google, Facebook, and Twitter grew to this monster status, and now we're having cultures collide and right in their back, right in their front door, and they're trying to deal with it. And it's you wonder whether this would be a huge shift for them or even their demise at some point, because at some point you just cannot make everybody happy. And so does it start to split up? Does the Facebooks, Googles, and Twitters start to break apart to be more more communist-based or more China-based or region? Is it geography, or is it language? Is it philosophy? I don't know. But we're at a crossroads. It's very interesting to see this. And the militant stuff seems to certainly have an effect on the result. Now, we continue on with that mindset. Now, what does the U.S. want to do in its world? Well, this is, again, the same conundrum that's going on in Reuters. David Shepherdson reported on the 4th that U.S. appeals court hears challenge to the net neutrality rules. Remember this? This is where our own U.S. companies are trying to boost the speed at which certain things are served versus others. And it shouldn't be that way. It should be that everybody gets to serve their message as quickly as everybody else. But in the past, it's been proposed that if you pay more, you get your message served faster. So a U.S. appeals court heard the arguments on Friday over the legality of the Federal Communications Commission's net neutrality rules in a case that may ultimately determine how consumers get access to content on the Internet. The fight is the latest battle over Obama administration rules requiring broadband providers to treat all data equally rather than giving or selling access to a so-called web fast lane. A 3-judge panel in a hearing that lasted over 3 hours questioned lawyers for the FCC and broadband backers about whether the FCC properly extended the sweeping authority it has to regulate telecommunications to Internet service providers. So-called net neutrality is a major issue for broadband providers like Verizon Communications and Comcast, which fear the rules may make it harder to manage Internet traffic and make investment to provide additional capacity less likely. It is also a big concern for content providers like Netflix and Yelp, worried that access to customers could be limited without net neutrality. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit has ruled twice against the FCC since 2010, and Judge David Tattle, who wrote both opinions, is on the panel that heard the case. The issue, Tattle said, is whether the FCC had authority to reclassify the Internet as a more heavy regulated telecommunications service rather than an information service. Lawyers for the Internet service providers argued that because they exercised some control over functions like cached pages, they met the burden as an information service provider, which would limit how extensively like FCC could impose net neutrality rules. But the FCC said broadband providers were acting merely to transport data, not making content decisions. An open Internet spurs innovation and helps improve broadband infrastructure, the FCC argued, saying network companies plowed $230 billion into the web over 2011-13 when open Internet rules were in effect. Judge Tattle wrote, "The majority opinion in 2010 ruling against the FCC after it cited Comcast for slowing Internet traffic speeds to some customers who were downloading very large data files from peer-to-peer networks. The FCC then issued new rules that blocked broadband providers from slowing or discriminating against Internet traffic." And Tattle wrote the opinion that blocked those rules in 2014. Congress has considered writing its own rules on net neutrality, but has not voted on any proposals. The appeals court ruled in 2014 that the FCC had used the wrong legal reasoning to issue the rules, which said without net neutrality, broadband providers represent a threat to Internet openness. The net neutrality rules are backed by the American Civil Liberties Union, library groups, and companies including Twitter, Medium, Yelp, and Reddit. The case is U.S. Telecom Association et al. versus FCC and U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit, number 15-1063. So you see what's happened there is because some folks are hogs, right, downloading tremendous amount of data and clogging the service of others. So if you're sitting there trying to simply check the weather and somebody else is downloading tons of movies that are clogging the pipe for Comcast to get you your information because they're serving the other guy, they have to make some type of a decision that says that that person shouldn't be taking all of that data. But then that person says, what's the difference? I want to do one function, you want to do another. And so now they're sitting there saying, oh, you know, what's the difference between me looking at the weather and that person watching a video? And somebody thinks it's more important that that person watch the video because the video is needs to be more real time. And as we continue to pile more and more real time data into the internet traffic, because more and more people are going to be moving from cable to streaming video, we're going to have some type of conflict. Now, to be honest with you, it's going to be short-lived, and here's the reason why. It's going to be short-lived because we're going to continue to find ways to send faster data, more compressed data, over the wires quickly. And the only thing that's going to happen is we're going to add more data because we're going to up the level of detail. You realize that we went from standard definition TV to high definition TV, and eventually we're going to go to ultra high definition TV. When you send ultra high definition TV across a wire, it takes a lot more data than standard. And the more people start to watch TV and want more ultra high definition, the more that wire has to carry that data and the more data that's coming through. That will hold back the ability for me to just check the weather on my web page, which is a lot smaller data. But eventually, like I said, the internet and the service providers are going to have a way to make more data come through as they continue to build out our fiber optic wiring. But that's an infrastructure change, and it will happen over time. But it's an interesting game that's being played here, and we keep hitting the extremes on both ends, and that's what causes these things to show up in the court system. We're going to take another quick break. We'll be back with more of Tech Today in just a few minutes.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HunterdonChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
More to talk about on Tech Today, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. We're talking about telecommunications. We're talking about service providers and why Verizon is in the news on TheVerge.com. It says Verizon rolling out Wi-Fi calling to Samsung devices this week, iPhones next year. I wonder what they're talking about. Dieter Bahn wrote this article on the 6th, and it says that Verizon is turning on Wi-Fi calling for devices on its network next week, starting with Samsung Galaxy S6 and S6 Edge. Additional devices, including iPhones, will be updated to support the service early next year. Verizon is the last of the four big U.S. carriers to flip the switch on Wi-Fi calling, perhaps in part because it waited until it could get an official waiver from the FCC to do it. AT&T also received a waiver and also had some squabbles with T-Mobile over its lack of official approval. Verizon is positioning Wi-Fi calling as part of its advanced calling feature, which is the branding the carrier is applying to both Volt HD voice calls and its own video calling service. What's less clear is whether Verizon handsets will default to using Wi-Fi if it's available, or if it will only resort to a Wi-Fi network when a customer uses advanced calling on our 4G LTE network and travels outside of coverage. The Wi-Fi calling feature will require a software update for compatible phones, so if you have a Galaxy S6 or S6 Edge, keep an eye out for that next week. It's going to be rolled out in phases. So what you may not realize, and it's funny because I'm dealing with this right now in a place that I'm doing some work for, is that you have both your calling, your texting, and your data. And it's funny that people think that they need their Wi-Fi to make their calls, but that doesn't really help you. It's still, your phone is still going to use the 4G LTE or the 3G signal to make phone calls and receive texts, regardless of whether you use Wi-Fi. But now what Verizon is telling you and what this article is telling you is that now, if you need to make a phone call and you don't have a lot of bars, quote-unquote, for your 4G LTE signal, you can now make a call across the Wi-Fi in your network and then have it go out through your Wi-Fi to Verizon. So that's a big change, and so that's a change on your phone. So for those of you who are managing Wi-Fi networks, you may now need to deal with the fact that people might be, in fact, using your Wi-Fi signal for voice calls. And that could be an interesting challenge. Now, what you also need to realize is the amount of calls that are going through could have an effect on everything else that you're doing. So many people don't realize that there's two different radios in your phone, two different radios potentially in your computers, your tablets. So you need to, you can use both, but, or you can make a decision between both. You make the decision right now because you decide whether you're on airplane mode or whether you're stopping the mobile data or whether you're turning off or turning on Wi-Fi. What this article is talking about is that when they roll out this other software update and you have access to both radios, you have access to both the 4G LTE and you have access to the Wi-Fi, the question is, when you place a call, which one is it going to use? Now, from a Wi-Fi provider's point of view, if I'm running a Wi-Fi network in my business or my home, I'm concerned that personal people might be using my Wi-Fi to send, to make phone calls. From the caller's perspective or the receiver's, person I'm calling, from their perspective, might be interesting to learn that you could decide to go outside of your business or go inside your business if you have access to both radios and data. You may have to deal with that because now if you're using my Wi-Fi to make your phone call, that becomes the property of my business, even if it's a personal call. So you might need to start thinking about that. It's going to make some interesting, challenge there. People don't realize that they actually might have more putting themselves at a privacy risk because they are using their business's Wi-Fi to make personal calls. So for those of you who manage networks, you need to start dealing with that. That's a very interesting challenge. What else is going on? Well, let's see. We have five biggest things in tech that you missed this week, according to Gene Marks on Forbes. He says, here are the five things that happened in the world of technology this past week that you might have missed. Analysts say that mobile phones saved this year's Black Friday. A quote from Newsweek says, over 36% of online sales this Black Friday came from mobile shopping, and that includes both smartphones and tablets, according to data provided by IBM. And for the first time in Black Friday history, more than half of all online shopping-related traffic at 57.2% came from both types of devices. Smartphones accounted for the lion's share. 57% of all mobile sales came from smartphones, and overall, smartphones were used to shop nearly two times as much as last year. How about that? Number two, Microsoft's new service makes app developers out of everyday employees. A quote from Computer World says, Microsoft unveiled a new beta service that's supposed to help ease the tension by allowing anyone to build an app. No software development experience required. Power Apps combine a cloud application backend with easy-to-use tools that make creating a mobile app a drag-and-drop affair. Power Apps applications can pull in information from a variety of data sources, including Office 365, Dynamics, Google Drive, Workday, and other services. Developers can also build connections for Power Apps in their own services if there isn't a connector already available. Wow. Number three, United Airlines is giving iPhones to its 6,000 customer service reps. From TechCrunch, it says Apple has advanced its relationship with United after the airline announced plans to outfit 6,000 or so customer service reps with the iPhone 6 Plus. United, which says it operates close to 4,000 flights per day across 350 airports on six continents, said its staff told us they needed better tools to serve our customers, especially during severe weather and busier travel times. That's pretty cool. That's a bold move, by the way, to give your employees your 6,000 iPhones out there. Because it's going to be interesting to see how they're used in all those situations. Number four, Facebook's live streaming feature isn't just for famous people anymore. From Mashable, it says Facebook previously added live streaming to its Mentions app, which is limited to people with verified accounts. The feature called Live will begin to roll out in small percentages of people in the U.S. who have iPhones. It's not clear if or when Facebook plans to make it available more broadly, though the company often tests new features among small groups of users before it provides it to the entire user base. And number five, when sensors can detect smoldering cables before they catch a light. From Gizmag, a team of researchers from Karlsruhe Institute of Technology and Karlsruhe University of Applied Sciences have developed hybrid sensors that detect gases given off by overheated plastic cables before too much damage can occur. So with all the wiring that's out there to provide the internet and make the internet what it is and make your network what it is, you now have the opportunity to know before it becomes a fire. Very cool stuff. All right, we're going to take another break, and we'll be right back with more of Good Morning, more of Tech Today, excuse me, on HuntingChamberRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weikert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 and Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technologies to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
Hi, I'm Pat Smits, Law Offices of Patricia Garrity Smits, LLC. The Hunterdon Chamber is a great resource to find the best local business people and meet new friends.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
We're back. You're listening to Tech Today on HuntingChamber.com. Remember those vaunted New England Patriots and how they are, the ire of many folks. Obviously not all the not of the Patriots fans, but there's one thing that I have to say about the Patriots. They are innovative. They take on the latest. They go against the grain of the stodgy conservative NFL to a certain extent and take on new technologies and new ways of looking at things. And TechCrunch reports that Patriots practice in VR, that's virtual reality, 10K Google Cardboard viewers being given away at Gillette Stadium. So the Google Cardboard team has teamed up with Bank of America and Visa to bring a new virtual reality experience to Android and iOS. The subject is the New England Patriots, and you'll be able to immerse yourself in a practice they participate in. To go along with the new experience, 10,000 customized cardboard viewers are being handed out to fans at Gillette Stadium. This is yet another cardboard giveaway meant to bring virtual reality front and center to the types of folks who could eventually be converted into VR believers. Think the New York Times giveaway. Here's the 360-degree video experience you can use to mouse and manipulate the video to see what's happening in the directions. To grab a Google Cardboard or to view it, the Samsung Gear VR browser will show it off quite nicely, too. So you're taken into the training facility, onto the field, and onto the locker room with this experience. It was built on the Striver VR training platform. While the 360-degree video isn't true VR, it is that taste of a moment that you can grab for hours and make you forget when you have been talking about. These moments will pile up, and soon people are going to have a thirst for this type of content all the time. The brands dipping their toes in VR make it seem a little faddish, but until enough people experience some type of immersion experience, virtual reality is destined to be a thing for gamers. It's not every single person that I've watched try VR immediately wants more. If you're at a Patriots game today in which you plan on destroying the Philadelphia Eagles, you can grab a custom limited edition Google Cardboard viewer at the Patriots fan zone pregame or during the game. So it's hard to get a sense of it. You'd have to actually go to this article. It's on TechCrunch.com. It was posted on December 6th. Drew Olenoff is the author, and it says Patriots practice in VR. So check it out and see the video. Obviously, it doesn't give you the sense of exactly what it would look like with the cardboard viewer, but That's where the world's going, man. We are on our way to virtual reality experiences. Where else is tech going? Well, TechCrunch says that unsexy plumbing, integrated data, and the future of the healthcare system. Posted on January 6th by Jason T. Andrew, he says, healthcare, like so many other sectors of the economy, is being transformed by technology. The changes are most obvious at the front end of healthcare, where health payment solutions, data analytics tools, telehealth, wearable devices, and other products and services are addressing the needs of both businesses and consumers. But just as important of what's happening behind the scenes in the healthcare system's back-end infrastructure. This unsexy plumbing, as it has been called, makes the front-end advances possible. For technology innovators, this plumbing also presents a myriad of opportunities to reduce costs, streamline processes, and shape the future of an industry that touches all Americans. Despite its importance, the plumbing isn't working particularly well. Healthcare information remains largely siloed and unintegrated, resulting in reduced efficiency, higher costs, and poorer outcomes. According to a survey of IT leaders by Meritalk, poor data integration is responsible for $342 billion in lost benefits every year as government health and human service agencies struggle to manage different data sets. Another survey from the consulting firm Accenture revealed that only 46% of doctors feel that their electronic health records system has improved patient outcomes. That's down from 58% in 2012. Moreover, 76% of doctors think that the poor interoperability of their EHRs has negatively impacted care. In a further example, a survey of leaders at accountable care organizations conducted by eHealth Initiative found that accessing outside data, then integrating it, were their first 78% and second most urgent challenges. Why hasn't data integration happened faster or better, more transformational? Legacy technology is one culprit. Existing regulations, too, are contributing to a lag in data interoperability. For example, according to a recent study by the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials, privacy-related barriers may discourage health information exchange, and one state's policies and practices may conflict with another state's or with federal laws. Nevertheless, momentum behind data integration is growing. At the public level, health information exchanges such as the California Integrated Data Exchange, called CalIndex, and the statewide Health Information Network of New York are working in gather and share health data with the goal of reducing costs, increasing efficiency, and ultimately improving the quality of care. The meaningful use standards established by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services are among example of the government's role in promoting data integration. By offering payment incentives to healthcare providers and organizations, CMS encourages the implementation and meaningful use of healthcare information exchanges and qualified EHRs. Among other objectives, while it's too soon to gauge the program's full impact, the incentives should ultimately lead to an expanded use of interoperability data, which will in turn support improved care and outcomes. See, the problem really is, folks, that because of privacy concerns, everybody's got their own set of your data records. And obviously it's not the full set, because when you go and see one doctor here in New Jersey and see another doctor in Pennsylvania, they're not allowed to share. The only way they get to share is when you have to bring the data back and forth. But what would really be effective is if the person in New Jersey could see the person in Pennsylvania's records and notes, so they could get a full picture of what you're all about. The problem is that we are concerned that if we hand everybody our full picture, they're going to use it against us. So we have this fear. And I'm not saying that